Welcome to another edition of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunabrody. Thanks for joining us on our economic forum today. Today is show 338. We're going to cover a few things today. Is the correction over? The damage from COVID, is that over? And the national debt. So we'll try to get through all of this. Don't forget, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your qualified investment professional before making any important decisions. The views expressed, remember, are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, right? The matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it, your lives and livelihood. Of course it's about our lives and livelihood. What else would it be about? In short, Money Matters is about you. So yeah, 338, is the correction over, the damage from COVID and the national debt? Let's talk about this correction. It was, you know, 3-4 weeks of, it looked like kind of a little bit brutal there. Let's take a look at what the Dow did during this correction, okay? So we're going to scroll up. I usually use yahoofinance.com. It's not a recommendation. It's just what I use. And it's a pretty good website, you know? We can take a look at stocks and funds and gold. And the only thing that's really not on here easily found is Bitcoin. Of course, Bitcoin, again, is in a crazy up mode. So what can I tell you, right? I don't know. Anyway, so we're going to look back a month at the Dow. Actually, let's go back 3 months. The Dow right around August 16th was floating at around 35,625. And about September, it was 33,919. So what's that? About a 1,500 point correction. Let's see. Let's take the Trusty S calculator. 33,919 divided by 35,500, let's say. And we get about a 5% correction. Not terrible. You know, usually we look at 10% corrections as necessary. So I don't know if that correction is over yet. Back in June, we went a correction to 33,290. That was about a little bit more than 2,300 points. I'm looking at the chart of the Dow. I really can't see anything technical with this chart that tells me that we're going down or up. So it's hard to say, you know. My intrepidation started somewhere around May with this market, being that it had run and all the stimulus programs were out and all the news was out and people were going back to work and the vaccines were, you know, kind of working and then kind of not working. And I had intrepidation. So I well publicized that I was going to a more neutral position in May. And as a result, it looks like I missed a little bit of a rally here in the portfolios. 33,600 is kind of where I went, kind of neutral, and it got to 35. So, you know, I might have missed 2,000 points on the Dow, and sometimes I take a rash for it, but it is what it is. Like I say, I'd rather miss a top than participate in a rout. And so I still hold that view. We really did unload somewhere in the area of around September 7th, and it continued to go down till it culminated in September 30th, and then it turned and started to run again. Made a small bottom September 30th and made a double bottom, little tiny one, at October 4th. So again, then it turned around again. It just seems like buy the dip seems to be what people do. They think the Fed's going to rescue them. And so again, still missed a little bit of a rally myself. I have a tendency to be early, and I'm not always right. Remember, nobody can forecast market direction at any time, and neither can I. I've been wrong before, as all analysts and advisors, etc., etc. But where most advisors, in my experience, take their opinion about the market from the muckety-mucks in Wall Street that they work for, I form my own opinions. You know, I graduated in economics in 1979, with honors. So I've been doing this, I don't know, 40 years. So I have read a lot of stuff on the markets. And, you know, markets are basically, I've always said Wall Street is designed to take your money, not make your money. It is run by professionals. That's all they do. And for you to think that you can beat them, the quants coming out of Harvard that study this and look at these screens 5 days a week, is tough. But being small investors, we can do things they can't. Well, you can go in and out of positions without moving the markets. And my difference between myself and the advisors is that I do believe in stop losses. And as a result, I hope to not show these tremendous losses, such as the Dow experienced in March of 2020. It dropped 38% in 3 weeks. That to me is unacceptable. So, however, when you have stop losses, you start selling stocks on the way down. When the market turns, you don't catch the wave up. And so if I've had any complaint, it's not keeping up with the Dow. And nor I don't think I should. I can tell you I have the smarts and the knowledge to gear you any way you want. I can gear you five times what the Dow is, but I don't think being geared to the Dow is smart. I don't think a lot of advisors do that anyway, because they don't just buy all stocks. They buy you some bonds and fixed income, which is thought to help protect against market falls. Thought to help protect. No guarantee there. So I don't know of any advisor that just buys stocks and doesn't buy some fixed income along with it. Fixed income has a tendency to move opposite of stocks, at least for a few days. And then, of course, if the route still continues, then you might see other things. So how far can this thing go? Well, you know, back it turned somewhere around March 23rd, 24th of 2020. And it was sitting around, The Dow was sitting around 18,591. And it is almost 35,603, almost a double in what? A year, one, 2 year, and about 4 months. So, you know, markets can stay crazier longer than you can stay liquid and longer than you can stay sane. So there you go. So I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say, you know. Gold has been shellacked, taken to the woodshed. And in our portfolios, we did hold a nice slice of gold. So that's one of the reasons the portfolios haven't kept up with the Dow. But again, I don't think it should keep up with the Dow. It shouldn't. Because if you keep up with the Dow and you were geared to the Dow, in March of 2020, you would have lost 38% in 3 weeks. And you would have freaked out. So there you go. News out today, Snap plummets 25%. After missing revenue expectations, that's on yahoofinance.com and CNBC, not for me. Chipotle earnings crush estimates as sale jump 22%. Higher menu prices offset rising costs, inflation costs, and Intel shares sold off after component shortages. As you know, there's a chip shortage. So there you go. All right. And so where do we go from here? For sure. Well, I just have to take a look and see what's going on. We'll take a little peep at Yahoo Finance, see what the headlines are before we go on to with the rest of the show. Tesla posted earnings. Still selling more cars. Not a recommendation to buy or sell, of course. So we'll see what happens. And I do believe that the stock market's going to 40,000, but not without a possibility of some severe corrections. I'm not saying it'll happen. I'm just saying that it is a possibility. So we'll look at that. Okay, we'll be right back to talk about the damage from COVID, the real damage from COVID, and the national debt. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Okay, welcome back. Welcome back to Money Matters, show number 338. My name's Mark. My name's Mark Cuniberti. We're also going to cover, if we have time, the trillion-dollar coin. So we'll see what that's about. Anyway, so is the correction over? We covered that. So let's talk about the economic damage from COVID. So the economic damage from COVID, coupled with mankind's, or now we should say humankind's, the decision on how to deal with it, how did we decide to deal with COVID? It continues to wreak havoc on worldwide economies. I don't think that that is really questioned. The shutdowns, in an attempt to slow the virus, right, resulted in a record number of businesses reducing hours or going under completely. I forecast when this thing started and they had shutdowns that we were going to lose 25% of small business. The massive stimulus programs were undertaken in an attempt to mitigate the damage from COVID, which manufactured trillions in U.S. dollars. Government borrowing. When you print money, it's borrowed money. This has stuffed an already overbloated national deficit into an even larger debt load, which I believe, in my opinion, will shackle government balance sheets for decades. Man, when you have debt, you got to pay it off, right? This tsunami of government funds then lit not only the stock market, but the fires of inflation, resulting in skyrocketing prices in many of the things we buy. And I don't think that's a hidden thing. I'd warned about inflation, oh gosh, a year and a half ago when they started doing all these bailouts, and you are seeing it now. You ever seen a price of steak lately? Holy mackerel. The fear of contagion, in other words, the fear of getting COVID, and those massive unemployment bonuses, remember those massive unemployment checks they were sending out? In my opinion, caused people to stay home. They stay home for some reason. Either they were afraid of getting it or they were being paid to stay home. And so businesses, in a conundrum, scrambled for workers.
Huh?
Many enterprises were unable to fully function due to staffing shortages. I know some restaurants that couldn't go to a full menu because they didn't have the staff. And some businesses had to shut their doors completely. They just couldn't hire enough workers. Or they couldn't afford the new rate. It's higher. You have to pay them a lot more money now to get somebody to come off the couch and work. Then as unemployment benefits ran out, when they ran out, I thought everybody would start going back to work. Nope. It was not to be. As soon as people started to party because of the vaccines and we thought it was licked, the Delta variant made itself known, struck fear again in the hearts of many, and back home they went. That meant that business owners who were on the verge of reopening and just starting to ring the cash registers again found their business seats empty of butts and their revenue streams drying up once again. Fast forward a few months into the future, which is now, and vaccination levels continue to climb, so businesses again look toward more paying customers and more available workers. We think that businesses were looking forward to more customers and more workers as these unemployment benefits ran out and more people got vaccinated. But again, the recovery has stalled as business owners then found themselves stymied by, in my opinion, unwarranted and onerous vaccination mandates. My opinion is I do not believe in mandating vaccinations. I know I'm going to take a rash from some of you, but that's my opinion. These mandates, vaccination mandates, are now causing a record number of workers to quit. I don't think anybody's going to argue with that. Here's the proof. According to the U.S. Department of Labor, 4.3 million Americans quit their jobs in August, setting a new record. Among the highest level of voluntary resignations were in the professional and business services, healthcare, and social assistant vocations, where vaccinations were mandated the heaviest. They are mandated pretty heavy in government workers and contractors as well. Meanwhile, 10.4 million job openings were recorded at the end of August, despite the fact that we have relatively high unemployment figures. I mean, there's a lot of people aren't working. Then why do we have 10.4 million job openings? Never before have we faced high unemployment levels while the business sector finds it hard to fill job openings. It's weird. High unemployment rates, but businesses can't fill the job openings. Insufficient staffing is causing worldwide bottlenecks and severe supply shortages. Now, there have been prognostications from very intelligent people that these shortages will kind of go away. Don't know. Have no opinion on that. Until we get enough workers, it's going to be tough. Warehouses sit full of undelivered goods. We already know that. They're unable to find workers. Packing and shipping product needs workers. transportation company is also unable to find enough staff, can't unload enough ships, log enough truck miles, or make enough deliveries to satisfy demand, right? Well, I've seen my local post office guys, the managers are making runs to deliver packages after hours coming up my driveway at 7, 8 o'clock at night. It's amazing. Shutdowns have shuttered many microchip factories. That's kind of hurt the car industry as well as all the other things that use microchips, which is basically anything electronic for the most part. And a slew of manufacturing plants can't find workers, making the shortages that much worse. And, of course, when you have shortages on the supply side, you will have more inflation. Many argue that the fear of Delta variant is causing the staffing problems. The fear of the Delta variant is why people are staying home. Others maintain that the mandates for vaccines are the major roadblock. That's my opinion. That's the one that I go for. There are probably people staying home because they're afraid of Delta as well, but I think that the vaccine mandates are having people stay at home or at least having shortages in workers confirmed by the record number of voluntary resignations, right? Whatever the reason, shortages are again putting even more stress on an untenable situation in our economy. Now we have shortages to deal with. And wildfires and what's this, locust? Now I heard there was a cyclone bomb storm going to hit the Pacific Northwest today or tomorrow. It's coming. Some argue the entire decision process of those powers that be have been flawed from the beginning. Some argue that the entire decision process of the worldwide powers to shut down, and whatever they thought about the vaccine and the mandates and the COVID, that they were flawed. Shutdowns were claimed by some to be based on bad science. Let me repeat that. Shutdowns are claimed to be based on bad science, that they don't work, and that the unwillingness of many to accept the inevitable and unpreventable damage that this virus would ultimately cause, being a very pernicious virus. Not precocious, pernicious. So, some are contending that the powers that be were unwilling to accept that this virus and the damage they caused was inevitable and unpreventable, no matter what we did. Now, on the other side of the coin, others maintain we didn't do enough. Others say we didn't do enough. We didn't shut down enough, that our response to the shutdowns was we didn't shut down long enough, we didn't enforce it far enough, there was non-compliance of many, which ignored the shutdowns, many were not wearing masks, and many were and still unwilling to vaccinate. That's the other side of the coin. Regardless of who's to blame and what side of this argument you lie on, the record number of resignations we are seeing is causing more and again undue hardship on businesses and individuals. The resulting shortages of goods and services because of a lack of available workers, that is now being exacerbated by the record number of resignations. Can you believe it? Making an already tight labor market even tighter. Meanwhile, another thing we have to contend with is inflation caused by money printing, right? Print more money and things go up in price. Also caused by now supply side shortages because we can't get enough people to produce stuff. So whenever you have a shortage on the supply side, that causes the price to go up as well. Some are saying that what we are seeing is getting close to the perfect storm as it pertains to wreaking severe havoc on the economies of the world. The cyclone bomb of economic damage. It remains to be seen just how many more shocks our system and the global economic system can handle. But one thing I think you will agree with, and I agree with, is the economic effects from COVID are far from over. And I'll end this portion of the show by saying, you ain't seen nothing yet. We'll be right back with the trillion-dollar coin. What is that? Welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining us today on your economic show entitled Money Matters. This is show 338. Is the correction over? The damage from COVID? And the trillion-dollar coin. What is a trillion-dollar coin? You guys read about this? Here's how this whole thing works. You know, the government owes a lot of money, right? They printed up $5, $6 trillion just in the last 18 months to deal with COVID or so. And now they have a government shutdown coming. And the parties are fighting again because we have a debt limit and we need more money to spend, so we have to vote in a new debt limit. And one side of the aisle is saying, we need this, we can't shut down. The other side of the aisle is saying, oh, we're not going to borrow anymore, which is, we will borrow more. A solution to be able to get the money without borrowing it. Remember, if you print it, the government prints it, it's borrowing its debt. So the U.S. government is running a $29 trillion deficit. Go to usdebtclock.org to have your mind blown. It has another $157 trillion in unfunded liabilities, which is debts that are not due yet, but we still owe them, okay? $29 trillion and $157 in debts that are not due yet, but still owed. If you printed a dollar a day for a trillion days, it would take you 31,658 years. You have no idea how much $1 trillion is. Now you know, at a dollar a day, it's 31,658 years, somewhere near. We have a $1.9 trillion stimulus package and a $3.5 trillion stimulus package proposed, being hotly contested in Congress. Washington wants to authorize this additional spending. Opponents of the bills from both parties point to the money already spent during COVID, about $5 trillion, saying another $2 trillion is excessive and will cause more damage to the U.S. budget. So the U.S. default approaches. Where there is a will, there is a way, although, in my opinion, a wacky way. And this idea about a trillion-dollar coin was originally tossed about and discarded last decade ago. But it's risen to the point of discussion again. The idea is to mint a platinum coin with a face value of $1 trillion and give that to the Federal Reserve of the United States, who in turn would deposit it into the Treasury. Then the Treasury Department, having the trillion-dollar coin ownership, could throw the coin back at the Federal Reserve and receive $1 trillion in dollars. Because you can't spend a $1 trillion coin, you got to get dollars for it. The idea is that with this theoretical $1 trillion coin on deposit, the government hasn't borrowed anything. It gave the Federal Reserve $1 trillion coin, and it's worth $1 trillion because we printed $1 trillion on it. So the government could pay its bills without additional borrowing. Therefore, it could make the debt ceiling a non-issue because it's not borrowed money, and we could avert a government shutdown. The coin, there's a little loophole in the original U.S. Coinage Act, which allows us to print a platinum coins, and it's legal tender. So basically, the coin would just be changed to U.S. dollars. It would just give me some change. Now, the idea is being pushed by, among others, Professor of Economics and Nobel Prize winner in Economic Sciences, Paul Krugman. Some say Krugman, not quite sure how it's pronounced. In his latest article, October 1st this year, entitled Wonking Out, Biden Should Ignore the Debt Limit and Mint a $1 Trillion Coin, Krugman, suggests the coin could provide a respectable solution to the spending plan and not officially increase the deficit. Krugman also suggests the coin does not have to contain actually $1 trillion worth of platinum, which would be a very big coin, bigger than you can imagine. It doesn't have to have any $1 trillion worth of platinum in it. It could be the size of a dime, but you could just print $1 trillion on it. Okay. If you find yourself scratching your head, you're not alone. Not only did the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve nix the idea a few times last decade, the logic of it is, well, I don't know, defies logic. Figure that out. The coin is being seriously considered by the powers that be. That makes me shake my head even more. More concerning is the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve, for the most part, who killed it last time, are not making much comment against it, at least many are not, like they did way back when. We have to remember different people run these institutions now than did 10 years ago. So there have been many other ideological changes, and now what seems impossible a few short years ago is now on the proverbial table of consideration. Not everyone is on board with the trillion-dollar coin. Ex-Federal Reserve Chief Janet Yellen, remember her? She's our Treasury Secretary now. She dismissed the idea of minting a trillion-dollar coin. Finally, some common sense. And she said the concept shouldn't be considered seriously. Like I said, where a will comes away. Why, I would ask, why stop at a trillion? Why not stamp it 29 trillion and wipe out the deficit once and for all? Or stamp it another 157 trillion and wipe out unfunded liabilities, which you remember are debts that are not due but still owed. Well, you could wipe out all the deficit for all times, but I don't think for all times is ever going to happen. If you wipe the deficit clean, it's kind of like destroying a beaver dam, okay? Or maybe an anthill. You get rid of it and you'll likely find another one in short order. Wipe the deficit clean, and do you think that they would stop borrowing? No. My opinion. In any case, the very concept of a trillion-dollar coin, minting a coin, making it platinum, because the Coinage Act says we have to make platinum coins. We can. So you make it out of platinum. You don't put a lot of platinum in it, maybe $10 worth. I don't know what they'd put in it. They'd probably make it, you know, size of grapefruit, but it probably only contained, you know, a couple $100,000 worth of platinum. I would say, why bother? Why don't we just print $1 trillion on a lead fishing weight and be done with it? Many analysts and economists doubt the coin idea will ever make it out of the concept stage. But if we learned anything in the last 6 years or so, don't bet against putting anything past those that rule us. It can probably get a whole lot wackier before we come to our senses. Okay, we'll be right back to end the show on Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunaberry. Stay tuned. And welcome back to Money Matters. That does it for today's show. Remember, we're on a reduced schedule. Reduced shows are only 29 minutes due to COVID. We used to be on Monday at noon. Now we're on pre-records on Thursday night at 6:30. So remember, discussions in this show should not be considered specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your qualified investment professional before making any decisions. Not indecisions, but decisions. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of the station, its staff members, or underwriters. I am a Medicare-approved agent in the state of California, as a disclaimer, and hold California Insurance License OL34249. And the website, it's free. Our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. The website is moneymanagementradio.com. Doesn't cost you anything. It's our way of this radio station saying thank you. Moneymanagementradio.com is the location. My name is Mark Cunaberry. Have a great day. Good, 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 good. I'm in.